This episode was uploaded Monday, May 29th, 2023, and you're listening to episode 30 of the 5x5 Room RPG Podcast. Hailing from origins as far back as 1976, psionic classes offer players unique options outside the standard arcane and divine talent set we're used to. And while these options make them unique, their fondness of more supernatural abilities has made them controversial throughout D&D's history. In some editions, this meant further dividing their skill sets into something more specialized, while in other editions, this meant relegating their abilities to mere subclasses. Today, Jeremy and I give our thoughts about psionic classes and their place in the D&D landscape, what makes them tick, and what about them ruffles the feathers of so many prospective players. The running time for this episode is 39 minutes.
Welcome to the 5x5 Room. I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Hollis.
And today we're going to talk about something weird. If you didn't listen to our character creation series, a little bit of a spoiler, something came up involving psionics. And we got to talking a little bit about it, and we decided, hey, I think this is worth having an episode about.
For those of you that can't see me, I have two fingers pressed very, very tensely against my temple, with my hand outstretched at Jeremy, trying my best to control his mind and convince him to do this episode with me.
And it worked. So, let's talk about psionics. I wanted to start a little bit with a primer, as far as what psionics has been in D&D. If you are unfamiliar with psionics as a concept, Professor Xavier. So, now that we've gotten through that,
I have to accept that some of you may have never heard of the X-Men franchise or the intellectual property that is X-Men. So for those of you that don't know, Professor Xavier is actually a large-scale, powerful telepath. He has the ability to move things with his mind. He has the ability to speak to other people just with a mind link, mind to mind. Sometimes the fights he gets in are things that are on a different plane of existence that us mere mortals could never hope to ever reach, all as a result of the strength of his mind.
So, what is psionics in Dungeons & Dragons, though? It's very easy to kind of play this off as something that doesn't matter, like it's not that important, or, you know, oh, it's just a splat book thing that existed in one or two editions. And I might have been tempted to agree with you, but I've done the bare minimum of research before recording this, so I've looked into it, and you, listener, might be surprised to know that psionics were introduced in a book called Eldritch Wizardry in the original Dungeons & Dragons game, not AD&D. We're talking original Gary Gygax TSR D&D. 1976 this book came out.
So, Jeremy, you're saying that this is not a concept, or at least, excuse me, this is not a class that is new. This isn't a concept that has not been explored. This has been there basically since the beginning.
So, you're almost right. Psion was not a class in OD&D.
Ooh, tell me more.
I will, but I wanted to once again preface how entrenched the psionic powers are in D&D by also bringing up that this same book that introduced the psionic powers that we later kind of grew into the Psionicus class, it was also the same book that introduced the Druid as a playable class and the Demogorgon as a monster. Like, these things are staples of D&D.
If Stranger Things didn't already solidify the Demogorgon as a primary concept in D&D, I think that knowing that it also stems from the original OD&D, like a splat book for that, to me also adds to its legitness. I think that's the technical term for it.
It is. But let me talk a little bit about what psionic powers were in OD&D. They were a thing that you rolled for. There was a lot of rolling in OD&D. You had random tables and such. And one of the things that could potentially happen is your character could have a psionic spark within them. And there were different psionic powers that they could effectively have access to. There was like these sort of different schools, and they might have like telepath abilities or empath abilities or telekinetic abilities. And anyone could have them. It didn't matter if you were a wizard or a sorcerer, or actually, I guess it didn't exist probably, but a fighter or a fighting man. Regardless of your class, you could just happen to have the psionic spark. It was just an extra thing on top of your class as far as how you interacted with the world.
Okay, so it was something that you had in addition to the class that you were going to play already.
Yes.
And if I recall, this was also during the time where, for example, to be a paladin, the multiple attribute dependency problem that you would, you know, come to always have, you had to roll the stats that would allow you to even play the character that would have that problem.
Or eventually level up the stats and then start taking levels of paladin.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. These were things that you would aspire to less so than just suddenly have. So AD&D also had psionics. This is moving past what we know of as original Dungeons & Dragons. Like the big published Advanced Dungeons & Dragons had psionics in the player's handbook.
To me, that sounds like that's a clear example of them actually kind of liking the concept and really making sure it's printed on paper in the base core rulebook.
Yeah, definitely. Like, the reason I'm kind of going into this detail is to stress the idea that, especially right now, there's sort of this idea that, okay, we could have psionics or we couldn't have psionics. It's not really a huge deal because they've always been this fringe thing. But it's important to remember that that's not really the case. Like, psionics were a major part of the older editions of D&D. Second edition, it was the first time that it actually shows up as a class. It is a late edition. It comes from a splat book, but we get introduced to the psionicist, and they have the different schools, and this is maybe, well, we'll get into that a little later, but I have some conflicts when we get to this point. In 3rd and 3.5, the psionicist gets renamed to the Scion. Some other changes happen, and you and I played a lot of 4th edition, and so we're aware that there was a psionic power source, so there was effectively a host of psionic-based classes. We had the Battle Mind, the Scion, the Ardent, and weirdly enough, the Monk, which, by the way, is pretty funny because while you could have psionic powers in most classes in older editions of D&D, there were some classes that could not ever get psionic powers, and one of them was the Monk.
I wonder what it was that changed their minds about allowing the Monk to be a psionic.
Not just allowing, but forcing. A lot of people didn't love the idea of the psionic Monk, and I'll agree, I was one of them. I'm not super fond of it, but I can see why they went that route. The last thing to maybe talk about in terms of the state of psionics in D&D is 5th edition. And the state of it is, well, I can't say non-existent. There was an Unearthed Arcana article years ago that introduced a class called the Mystic, and it would be the equivalent of the Scion, which renaming it isn't a huge deal because, once again, there wasn't a class till 2nd, and it was called the Psionicist, and then it was later called the Scion in 3rd. So if we rename it again, who cares? But it didn't fly. People didn't like it. They thought it was a little too complex for 5th edition, which has tried to keep things relatively simple. And so it, for the most part, got scrapped. We haven't seen it again. Later down the line, I think just a couple years ago, we had some psionic-based subclasses that were introduced for the existing classes. There was like a soul knife for the rogue. There was like effectively a psionic warrior for the fighter, and effectively a scion school for the wizard. These things came around, but as far as I know, I'm pretty sure they're still Unearthed Arcana. They might have been released in one of the later editions, but they're definitely not going to see the light of day in 1D&D. So let's kind of pivot from here. And you talked a bit about this, but I wanted to ask you, Hollis, what is psionics? And to preface, I'm asking this in terms of pop culture. I don't mean just D&D, but to you, what is psionics?
What I think of in terms of like psionics is a character that uses the mental abilities they have, internal mental strength, and then that can manifest itself in a sort of outward way to their surrounding world. Sometimes it doesn't have to be visible, but it can be visible. It can be simply you looking at a target and now their node starts bleeding as their head begins to shake. Or it can be something like using your mind to lift heavy objects and moving them around, similar to how a mage might use Mage Hand. I know that I'm leaning heavily into like the description we've given of Professor Xavier, but that's really what I do think of. I think of someone with these telepathic abilities that uses them very well, and it comes from within them.
So in Traveler, psionics exists. And one of the things that I kind of think of, I know that it's a little different, but psionics often to me is represented as space magic. Effectively, what happens in Star Wars, they call it the Force, but realistically, they use it to lift things telekinetically. They use it to control people's minds, albeit temporarily or minorly. And maybe it can manifest itself as lightning or running really fast, depending on what movie you're watching. But I think a lot of that is this sort of idea that it's almost like a sci-fi version of magic in a lot of games. And in that regard, is there even a place for it in something like D&D? So let's refocus now. You have your mental image of what psionics is. Does it change if I ask you, what is psionics in D&D?
Something that I immediately want to compare it to is actually a class like the Sorcerer. You know how the Sorcerer sort of gains their abilities sort of from this intrinsic connection they have to, like, the Weave, for example, is like a common concept amongst magic users. It's where their magical energies effectively tap into and how they draw from that. Psionics is sort of a different version of that concept. There's a sort of internal magic that manifests itself as a result of these embedded abilities and strength of the mind that you have as a character. And that's really where the focus in your quote-unquote magic comes from.
You definitely use some keywords there I want to jump on. But first, I did want to ask you, especially based off your descriptions, do you think that psionics is only something that is always there, or is it something that can be trained and learned?
I think of it sort of like how it works in the Traveler game. For example, in that episode, I rolled a character that had these sort of latent abilities that then they would have to work on. They would have to develop for them to really come into their own. I look at them from that lens. Perhaps maybe you're someone who's naturally gifted with these psionic abilities. In fact, there might be quite a few people that have smaller, less powerful psionic abilities, but you are the Anakin. You are the Obi-Wan. You have the ability to use this concept on a level very few people are able to. And as a result, that's what gives you strength.
Yeah, I think they have like force sensitivity in Star Wars, but I also don't know if they just acknowledge that can anyone learn the force, or is it like you really have to be one of these special few? I'm not that well versed in Star Wars, so I couldn't tell you. But you said the word magic a lot when you were talking about what it is in D&D. So here's the big question. Is there a discernible difference between magic and psionics? By the way, there is not a wrong answer to this question. This is an opinion.
I would say, if I want to dig into the minutiae, probably. But outside looking in, just through that lens, I don't separate them any differently. I would even add, part of what makes a class like the Fighter and the Battlemaster and the Superiority Dice be so interesting is that the abilities provided give some additional flexibility that complements that class in a way like spells complement mages and having additional flexibility for their spells. So when I zoom out and look at it that way, to me, it's very similar to magic. I might give this same opinion talking about the Battlemaster Fighter in that I think it gives them more mage-like abilities. At that point, it's almost not even discernible for magic for me.
Okay. So do you think that it should be represented differently mechanically?
I say give them things like spells per day or spell slots, just like anyone else. You telling me your brain can't get tired?
So I have spells per day that I can cast. I just have like a separate spell list?
Yeah, why not?
So this is just the wizard subclass that they made, right?
Reveal no secrets.
So obviously the psionicist, psionic powers, there's been a lot of iterations of this in D&D, and I think that's proof enough that they don't even exactly know how they want this to be represented. And the mystic Unearthed Arcana was another example that they still don't know how they want it represented. I have slightly different opinions. I think that psionics should be discernible from magic. Now, I don't know that it should be its entire own system. I'm a little biased, so I have played a lot of a game called Shadowrun, and Shadowrun breaks a a lot of the game down into different subsystems. Like, you've got your normal combat rules, and then you've got magic rules, and then you've got hacking rules, and then you've got summoning rules, and, like, all of them have their own different way of functioning mechanically, and I personally like that, though obviously it's very difficult on a game master that has to, like, know all of these rules if they plan on running a game like this. But I think it helps Psyonix stand out if it functions different mechanically and narratively. Like, if Psyonix is just something that is just a spell that you cast, if it's just a school of magic, then at what point does it just cease to be Psyonix and just be another school of magic?
And we've seen how this is sort of represented differently and how the classes worked in previous editions. They often work on a series of psi points, or maybe key points, that allow them to use their abilities in a unique way. Sort of almost like meta magic, but just a little bit different.
Yeah, that was the 3.5 idea that they had, effectively the more standard RPG MP system, although they were called PowerPoints. It functioned like the standard RPG where you just cast a spell, it costs this many points, and instead of using spell slots. Even in that regard, I would be hard-pressed to say, well, is there really any difference between this and magic? Like, realistically, the way that you do it is mechanically different, but not by much. I don't know. I'm torn on this. I like Psyonix being different. And in my opinion, if it's not different, I don't see a point in having it.
A question I would have for you, Jeremy. What do you think it is about the Psyonix? And yes, even with them being different, what is it about them that you think has rubbed people the wrong way? Or maybe made them not so welcomed in tabletop settings?
I think one of the things is D&D in general is like, is our lens into fantasy for a lot of people, because while Lord of the Rings established fantasy as a genre to an extent, Dungeons and Dragons did a lot in letting people play through that genre and kind of like find new avenues for it. And in a lot of people's brains, Psyonix doesn't fit in. Once again, it's space magic. It's a sci-fi concept. It doesn't have a place in a fantasy game to some people. And I can understand that to an extent also. But once again, I think if you make it weird enough or different enough and you can introduce it in a fun way, I think it can kind of come through regardless. But I do know it certainly does rub people the wrong way. Let's say a psionic class gets introduced in 5th edition. This new one D&D comes out and we've got a whole new psionic class. Do you disallow it? Do you care? Does it mean anything to you?
I think you allow it for the sake of having the diversity at the table and unique options for the players and you as the game master to bring. I know that there's other campaign settings where the psionicist or the psionix are heavily featured and actually, if anything, centered around them because of their unique abilities that are very different from a lot of the other classes. As a result of their uniqueness, they really do stand out to me as awesome, unique characters for players to play and awesome villains to provide to your party in a setting that maybe doesn't often have psionic characters at the helm.
I mean, yeah, mind flayers are like the number one culprit that everything about them is described as psionics, even in like the original monster manual for 5th edition. And yet there is no real reference of what psionics is or how it's different from magic. Would you be opposed if Psyonix was represented more like it was in the older editions, where quite anyone can just have it, there's really a table that you roll on, or maybe if you want it to be less random, maybe it's a feat you take, that a background that is like, oh, you have that Psyonix spark, and so you get this like new ability?
When we were rolling a character in Traveler, I really liked that concept where this is a unique ability that I will have that isn't just what I am, but it's something that is an addition to the character I would like to play. However, I think that Traveler is a system that has this designed and baked into the mechanics of the system. D&D is a very different system. It goes out of its way to make sure that each of the classes have their own lanes, and that those lanes are relatively well fleshed out. So psionic characters, for example, you'd mentioned some that extend from 4th edition, such as the Ardent, such as the Scion, such as the
Battle Mind.
Thank you. And in 4th, because they tried so hard to make them so unique and so individual, it didn't feel like you were stepping on any toes for putting them in their own lane. And I think I vastly prefer that. There's an interesting thing that can happen when psionic abilities or something that just kind of randomly propagate in a character that's gaining these abilities. But we have a class that sort of operates this way already, and they are their own individual separate class in the Sorcerer.
Yeah, the Sorcerer is pretty wild. I mean, that's one of their entire subclasses, is that they just have this wild magic. But once again, I personally would love a division between what is magic and what is psionics. A clear division. This does make things a little difficult. In some of the older editions, like, there is a magical invisibility spell, and then there's a psionic detecting spell, and the psionic detecting spell can't detect someone who's magically invisible, but they could detect someone who's psionically invisible, and wow, that's some minutia I don't want to deal with. But let's talk about some places where psionics is almost necessary. So there is a setting called Dark Sun, and in Dark Sun, there is no divine power source at all, no more clerics. You could, I guess, kind of be a paladin, but there's really no divine magic. I don't know if there's druids. In the older editions, there might have been some semblance of these things. But the gods are dead, and the world is dying, and the reason this is happening is because magic. Because people abused magic, they used it too much, and they effectively siphoned off the life that is the planet, and it's fallen apart.
It's amazing how art imitates life sometimes, but please continue.
That's true. In this regard, unlike life, magic has been outlawed because it's been such a harm to the planet.
Okay.
So instead, if you go around casting spells, people say, hey, what are you doing? Like, it's a big deal. You're going to get in trouble if you're casting spells because, hey, you are furthering the destruction of the planet. So the primary source of what we shall call magic that existed in Dark Sun was psionics. Psionics was a big part of the setting because if you're using magic, you're a criminal, and there was no divine power. So if you're doing anything supernatural without breaking the law, you were a psionicist. Another thing is, actually recall, there were these things called wild talents, even in the 4th edition version of Dark Sun. They were aiming to replicate that OD&D style of psionics. They had this list of powers, and effectively you would roll randomly, and your character would just get one of these. And it was just this idea that, oh, if you have that psionic spark, maybe you can do something like light fires, or you can do something like send a telepathic message at a short distance. They weren't game-breaking. They would do very minor things, but you could maybe build your character around them and flavor other things you were doing as psionics. And that could be maybe an interesting idea if 5th edition were to pursue this idea that, okay, maybe everyone, or even just those who want to roll, could roll, get this random power, and say that you can light fires with your brain and you're a sorcerer, you go, well, I'm going to keep taking fire powers and I'm just going to flavor it as I've got, like, I'm growing my mastery of these pyrokinetic abilities.
I think it's interesting to have psionic abilities be something that the characters can kind of just gain over time or may have a natural aptitude for that allows them to be able to kind of breach and reach into these psionic abilities. It does make me worry in the same way that it made me worry when we were building the Traveler character. If I'm sitting across from the table of someone who randomly rolled having a really cool thing, I might find myself also wanting to have the really cool thing. And there's a little bit of FOMO that kind of sets in when I see other people can have the really cool thing and maybe I just wasn't lucky enough to have the really cool thing. But if it's divided out in, like you described, in a way that's more of like a feat, it's an optional feat that you can take when you would normally take any other feat, it allows you to kind of dip your character's toes into that yourself. Hey, maybe instead of getting your regular attribute bonus, perhaps maybe you'll get the relevant bonus for psionic abilities on a +1, but then get a cool psionic ability on top of it. So this is actually showing that your character is leaning into this as an additional power source.
Yeah, maybe there's even like a string of feats, and so you can kind of keep taking them to get your powers a little bit stronger in place of doing other things. This makes total sense, and it might as well go into the last section that I wanted to talk about, which is what should D&D do with psionics going forward. But before we get too much into that, there's just something about it being random that I love. And I know that not everyone is going to enjoy that because it is, you're right, there is going to be that sense of FOMO when, let me tell you, we've done Traveler character creation a dozen times with a dozen different people or more, and we have never straight rolled someone with psionic powers.
Oh, wow.
Like, you rolled the, like, 1 in 30-something or higher chance to, like, happen to get it. And even get it really early.
Mm.
And that was really exciting and fun. And I can just imagine that if I was another player in the game and you and I were sitting at the table and you did that, I think I wouldn't feel FOMO. I would feel, oh my gosh, Hollis just got psionic powers. This is so cool. This is going to be such an interesting thing that we get to deal with in the game. And I think if you can come at it from that regard, especially if things are random and everyone has a shot at them, and maybe there's other things. Maybe it's not just psionics. Maybe there's, what if there's a random roll for heck anything? What if there's a random roll that everyone gets something? And maybe you got psionics, but I started with like an heirloom magic weapon, or I got this other fancy ability that is just something completely different, like a boon from a deity or something. That would be super cool to me, where everyone kind of gets something, but it's all very different and it's implemented differently mechanically.
And D&D has a huge lack of things like this. It's very rare in D&D that you're going to find abilities or extra traits or talents that are going to be actually unique and randomized in that way. Outside of the normal items or magical weapons you would get as a result of combat encounters or exploration or other narrative events, in terms of character creation, this usually isn't something that gets tapped into very much in designing a character in D&D. In fact, I would almost argue they do everything they can to shy away from this as an option in Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah, they want to give the player more control, which, yeah, that's a good thing. And they want to give the game master more control over their narrative, also a good thing. But we kind of talked about this when I said in our character creation series, seeking that elevated third tier of game, that point in time where the players aren't the ones controlling what's going on, the game master's not really controlling what's going on, we've all kind of put in here together and we're all at the mercy of these dice, and who knows what's going to happen.
Looking forward into future iterations of D&D, do you see the psionic as a class that you think finally deserves their time in the sun once again to be fully fleshed out as their own class archetypes that have their own lane? Or are you sticking with your current opinion here, where you want it to be something a bit more random, a bit more spontaneous that adds new life, something interesting for a character build?
You know, personally, I think I would be happy with either. I really just hope that psionics has a place in 1D&D or 5.5 or 6th edition or whatever we're going to call it. I just kind of hope that it comes to life in some real way. And I would prefer that it's not just subclasses of existing classes, because that's not exactly what I'm talking about. I like psionics as its own standalone class or multiple classes, like it was in 4th edition. But if everyone can kind of get that spark and maybe pursue it in their own way, that's also a really cool idea to me.
And some of you may be thinking, there's another question that often gets asked about psionics, such as, straight up, how do you feel about having them in your game? I think we have kind of shied away from this question, but I think it's because, for the most part, we're on the same page. Correct me if I'm wrong after I give my statement here on this, but I think that any additional option I can give a player, even if I'm not really a fan of it, it doesn't really matter. I think that having interesting, cool, unique options really give players a lot of really fun things to do at the table, and I'm going to be usually in support of players getting additional benefits, additional abilities, and cool things over me more or less complaining that maybe aspects of this new thing doesn't quite sit right with my own personal view or take of what a fantasy role-playing game is.
I mean, if you're a game master, it's your world. I think you're free to say psionics don't exist in my world. This isn't Star Wars. And sure, more power to you. That's your prerogative. You can do that. But I agree personally. I like when there's a lot of weird things going on in my game and we get to together figure out how it makes sense. This is maybe a bad place to end on, but it's something that I've been meaning to bring up this conversation, and so I want to talk about it. If anyone can pick up psionics, like if we go the route that says, okay, it's just like a spark that you can get, maybe you roll it on a table, maybe you take it as a feat, can anyone do magic?
To some degree, I say that precedent is already set. I'm going to use the same talking point I've used for a lot of your other points. The sorcerer represents a character who has this natural affinity for certain magical abilities. Even if not in wild shape, you often find that in the backstories of sorcerers, there is a connection to some other magical element that lends them their power, they borrow power from it, or just allow them to be sort of a savant for those magical abilities. If that is the case, I see no reason why it can't be something that is possibly more common. Even if in the plot or the narrative provided for what you're doing at your table, if it's the case that psionics are rare, I don't think that should necessarily stop even the entire party from having psionic abilities. In fact, that rarity and the idea that all the characters have psionic abilities only adds to the overall rarity of the whole table, the whole experience. Just the same as I'd be incredibly excited to see a group full of sorcerers. Yeah, I think I'd be a little excited also to see a group full of psionics.
It's true. I mean, you pull in a bunch of weirdos at once that can all do the same thing, and you go, oh, that's strange. How's that going to play out?
And we even have this as a trope narratively in other media. How many times have you seen the unique bunch of weirdos all get a mysterious letter? Somehow they're all connected. Maybe their natural born abilities that they aren't aware that each other have are the reason why they're all connected.
Or maybe they're all in the wrong place at the wrong time when some event happened that sparked this ability in them.
There's a show that I've seen called Sense8, which, whether or not you like that sort of drama in a show, kind of plays with this concept. And I think it's one of my favorite aspects of that television show, and I love that kind of media, so why not at my own tabletop table?
Yeah, I agree. I think the reason why I brought up magic in the first place, though, is just this idea of... So there was the Strixhaven book that came out. And one of the things they added were backgrounds for each of the colleges. So you could be in the college of, it's like necromancy or something like it. They have like the dark spells and necromantic things. And then there's like another college that's a little more like almost math science. And if you take these backgrounds, which effectively, if you're running a Strixhaven campaign where you're here on campus, everyone's probably going to have one of these. They're a part of one of these colleges. It comes with some spells. So in that regard, everyone gets spells. It doesn't matter if you're a sorcerer and take it, you get some spells. If you're a fighter and take it, you get some spells. And honestly, I love it. I think of that when I think of how it might be fun to express psionics going forward in Dungeons & Dragons. And I think it would be a way that could be interesting, that people could maybe follow it down, like we've talked about with like a feat tree, effectively. Further down, they can expand on these abilities. And I want to see more of that. I want to see more where it doesn't matter if you're the cleric or the fighter or the rogue or the wizard, you can all be a part of this group and have this sort of link in your characters without having to just play the same class or something.
If we had a system that allowed the psionic abilities to sort of grow as a result of the feats that you take and other smaller options as your character progresses in level, I think it would be amazing to start off as we're going to just pick a class here, say like the rogue, who discovers they have these psionic abilities beginning at the first few levels they can gain a feat, and then maybe they just continue to take psionic-based feats for the entire life of that character. You start off by level 4, sure, you have some very early on psionic abilities, but maybe by level 16, what is a rogue anymore for your character? Yeah. Perhaps maybe the psionic abilities are just the way your character does what they do the best.
Yeah, and really this kind of gets down to things that I maybe don't love that much about D&D itself as a game is that it does kind of shoehorn you into a class, and once you are a rogue, you're a rogue, and unless you want a multi-class, which is generally not great, or broken, it's one or the other. But I think there's ways that we can do this. It's difficult because I like feats, which we've been talking about, but realistically, for one, fighters, at least as of now, this might change in one D&D, but fighters get more feats than everyone else. And also, even with fighters giving more feats, there's not a whole lot of feat getting in 5th edition. Especially, like, now we're kind of seeing them in backgrounds in 1D&D, so you might start with one. But back in 4th edition, you got a feat every even-numbered level, and level 1, and another one at 11, and another one at 21. So you had, like, 30-something feats by the end of the game. Now, this was a bit of a problem because you had to look through this giant list of feats, because if you can pick 30 of them, well, there's going to have to be 1,000. So there's enough interesting differences between your characters. And as a result, oh yeah, it was troublesome. But I do think that it's a little low on the number that you get in 5th edition. Like, your whole character might have 5 by the time that you finish a campaign, and it's not very many, especially if you wanted to do psionics and more. Like, what are you giving up to have to do the psionics? Are you giving up your ability to function as a capable rogue?
I'm not really sure how they would implement it. It would be neat if maybe after you take the first psionic feat, maybe that gives you the option at certain levels to take another psionic feat for some other cost. Granted, not a system designer, have no idea the implications of what that would mean, but I think my fundamental agreement that I have with you, Jeremy, here is that I think that Dungeons & Dragons needs something that's a bit more random, that isn't necessarily a class in its own lane. The biggest reason why I feel as though that implementation works best is because it kind of sits in the middle of both fences. If you really want a psionic class, well, the options available for you to somehow get fleshed out through feats or other alternative forms of character progression. But if you're the kind of person where you're not really agreeing that it should be a class, well, that's okay. It's not a class. It is a series of additional benefits you can give a character by sacrificing other feats and taking the feats specific to psionic abilities.
Yeah, I think we're onto something here, and I'm sure Wizards is going to come to us knocking down our door to get our opinion on how they should handle psionics in 1D&D, and it's a good thing.
Oh, I think that was the email notification from them right now. So
is that Mr. Wizards?
Yes, I'll respond to Mr. Wizards right now. Continue, please. I'm so okay. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Wizards, for reaching out to us in this fictional scenario that we've concocted. When it comes down to it, psionics are weird. I can understand why people think that they're weird. The whole point of this episode was for us to kind of, I don't know, spitball around what they might look like in the future, some things that we would like to see. And I don't know, maybe some house rules we'll implement in our future games, even if they don't come out the way we want in the actual game. And I also wanted to actually bring up this weird tidbit that I noticed in my bare minimum research, that psionics has been around as long as the druid. They're not anything new, and they're just as D&D as the Demogorgon.
Or the Warlord.
Well, you know, if we're bringing back classes, hashtag where's Warlord?
Hashtag where's Warlord?
I think that's enough for now. If you guys like psionics yourselves, maybe you've got some other ideas. Maybe we'll see more psionics in the future. I feel like it's unlikely that we'll see them in the original Player's Handbook for 1D&D. But, you know, spot books come and go, so we'll see them eventually, I bet.
I look forward to seeing psionics in future editions. I feel as though they're definitely a class archetype that in general needs a lot more love and support. And I think they have a place. I think you can make room for them at your table. Open your mind. Pun intended.
That's a good way to put it. So on that note, we'll just call it a close. Thank you for listening.
And have a good night.